We've come all the way to Welshpool today to talk to Mark Jones about his system at Trefant Farm here.
At Trefant Hall, it's a 500 acre farm on the Powys estate. We've been farming here since 1986. My mother and father have been running the farm on a single generation tenancy. And then in probably the last 7 or 8 years, I've become a partner myself. The rented ground has now transferred into a farm business tenancy in my name. Initially, back around foot and mouth time, I wanted to come home and farm originally, but we were actually culled with foot and mouth here, and times were pretty hard on the farm, so it was obvious that there wasn't going to be two incomes for me and my father at that time. So I went away to university to do agriculture and countryside management in Aberystwyth, and then luckily, after coming or completing that degree, I managed to get a job with ADAS as a farm consultant. And I probably spent 6 or 7 years, I suppose, learning the ropes and starting to build up a bit of a client base, really. And then luckily in 2009, I was awarded a Habiki Cymru scholarship, where I had the opportunity to go to New Zealand to study New Zealand's changing lamb production systems. So I spent 6 weeks there. And that really opened my eyes to how we could go a lot more grass and forage based at home. And I suppose I came back and peed my father off a little bit with a lot of changes, really. But I was very lucky that he was open to the changes. And so initially we had about 1,200 Welsh mules on the farm lambing in the middle of February. Everything would then be fed creep feed with the aim of getting all lambs away off grass and creep by the end of July. A very intensive system. We were buying 300 yearling ewes out of Welshpool Market every year, which was costing around £50,000. We were also spending about £25,000 to £30,000 on creep feed and concentrates for the sheep. So I suppose initially when I came home from New Zealand, I realised that there was a huge amount of work involved with this, and to provide me with an extra income on the farm, we needed to change the system quite drastically. So we looked initially at outside lambing. We changed the system, introduced the clean ewe to start with, and now we've moved over to New Zealand Romney, aiming to lamb outside from the 1st of April. And then the other important part of the system was introducing forage crop in the winter. So initially that was swedes, and now we've progressed onto fodder beet, where we'd hold the ewes from January, February to the first week of March, with the aim then of putting the sheep at grass, which had been rested, and we'd get away with feeding no concentrates at all. So we've gone from a bill of 30,000 down to zero within 5 years as we developed that farming system. The other key part was the suckler cows. We decided to sell the suckler cows and go into heifer rearing initially, and we started rotational grazing and also outwintering those. So we didn't need ownership of the cattle, which helped greatly, and we were getting a monthly income which was virtually guaranteed off the dairy farmer. That worked very well for 5 or 6 years. It also enabled the family business to, I suppose, pay out my brother and sister from the suckler cow money, which helped with the succession as well. And then just because of the change of rules with TB and the 10-mile radius they brought in about 4 years ago, we then started to change the cattle system, where we started bringing in Angus calves at 2 weeks of age in the autumn. They'd be obviously on milk and calf red through the first winter, out at grass the following summer, and we'd also outwinter those on fodder beet and finish them off grass at 22 to 24 months of age. So the aim was to build resilience across the whole farming system, really. And it really changed the profitability of the enterprise over those initial years.
So thinking about resilience, which you just brought in, how would you define resilience in a farming situation?
I think resilience is really about maintaining profitability during periods when prices might be very, very low. But also you've got to be looking into other factors, like we had the drought of last year, which hit us very hard here. We were a very dry farm, south facing, with about 6 inches of soil until we hit rock, so it burns off pretty drastic. So the other side of it, we've introduced about 40 to 50 acres of herbal leys. We're using a lot of coxfoot rather than ryegrass. We've got chicory, plantain, birdsfoot trefoil to go into all of our grazing mixes now. Our standard silage grass leys now contain a lot of red clover again, helps with the drought resistance, but it also adds extra protein to the ration for those calves as we transfer them onto grass silage from ad lib feeds when they're young calves.
Do you feel that those herbal leys take more management than a grass system?
I don't think they take any more management. I think they just need to be managed differently. They tend to require a longer rest period during the winter, and then it's really about the different grazing heights. So you don't want to graze them too hard, otherwise the stock will graze them out of the system, and you're going to be grazing them at higher covers to start with. They're just as easy as grass leys. The other important point to them is the leys are also containing a lot of white clovers and red clovers, and rather than spread fertiliser, nitrogen like we were, because we're quite an intensive farm on rotational grazing, we were spreading fertiliser 5-6 times a year. They haven't had an application of fertiliser at all, apart from a little bit of phosphate to top that up.
And do you see that being the same going forward?
Yeah, it's important to, I suppose that the key to this farm is lime really, and making that phosphate more available and allowing the plants and grass to grow at the maximum. So we invest heavily in lime every year, and we've also got standard phosphate application to try and, of course, as you're selling lambs, you're selling phosphate off the farm, so it's very important to keep our indices at the right level to maintain grass growth. So we're also in the grass check project, which is, I think there's about 50 farms across the country which measure grass. We plate meter weekly, we take the grass covers, and we're achieving about 12 tonnes of dry matter per hectare really, which is a reasonable performance for the type of farm we've got. Really, I suppose our next step is to focus on how do we finish lambs and cattle a little bit quicker. And it's all about increasing the digestibility of that grass. So that's again where the clovers and the herbal leys come in to really drive performance going forward.
Okay, so just thinking about the farms you visit in your consultancy role, how do you encourage them to build resilience into their system?
I think the key thing is really, I suppose, initially for them to sit down and really work out what they want to do and where they want to go going forward. Quite often we'll see that they're midway in between systems and neither doing early lambing or late lambing, and you'll find that they'll be selling lambs maybe in September, October time when the price is on the floor, but the cost is still quite high. So I would tend to push them. I don't think it matters what system they're doing. If they're a good farmer, they'll make good money whether they're an intensive system where they need 200% lambing, or whether they're going to be outside lambing later in the year where it's going to be near 140 to 150% lambing. So I think that's the key part of it to start with, is realise which system you want to do. And then after that, we just try and develop the system going forward. But the key to it has to be grassland management. And there's a lot of farms across the UK where I'm afraid it's pretty hopeless. And by sticking a few electric fences in and moving the stock regularly, it's surprising what improvements you can get with the ground you've got. It's possible to increase stocking rates by 40, 50% just by good grassland management alone. And that could be simply by just literally a new farmer coming into the ground and doing something different, or that same farmer just applying the paddock or rotational grazing.
And you were talking about measuring and the importance of measuring grass. That doesn't come naturally to sheep farmers. How do you encourage somebody to change their mindset towards collecting this data?
Yeah, I think initially I tend to stay away from the measuring and the plate meter and just focus on what they need to do by eye. So I suppose the equivalent of doing it would be saying, I want you to go into a field at Coke can height in terms of... 7 or 8 centimetres, and then come out once they've nailed it down to golf ball height. So I would always suggest farmers start with that. I know it sounds very simple, but it works very effectively. And as long as they keep moving around the farm with that as a main principle, they'll maintain quality throughout the year. And again, the other key part is try and move off that field after 2 to 3 days to stop the sheep grazing that regrowth, because that's going to slow down the growth of the pastures going forward. I suppose it doesn't really matter whether you're producing milk or red meat. The key thing is growing grass and converting it into what you want. So that's the key message, really. So quite often I'll go to farms where they say that they can't grow grass, and quite often next door to them they may have a spring calving herd which utilise grass from the middle of February all the way through to December. So there's no excuse there, it's done directly in front of them. So really, I suppose the dairy farmer is taking it to the next level. They've got infrastructure and tracks and water. With a sheep system, you're just moving the sheep around. So yes, you'll need water and electric fences, but there's no need for the investment in the tracks. So it's the same principle, it's just trying to convert it into sheep and into beef.
Okay, what about looking at the rest of your farm and all the assets within that farm in terms of building your resilience? So looking at the opportunities to earn income, how would you deal with that when you go and visit your farmers?
Yeah, it's just trying to focus on, again, what they want. Again, tourism's been very useful for us on our farm. Again, we're 2 or 3 miles from Powis Castle, so we initially started with bed and breakfast and have now swapped to self-catering. So we've got a very big house, so we're trying to utilise that as best we can. And it's really about just looking at those different resources on your farm and what they can be used for. It's amazing now, just even in the NEC, they do some amazing diversification events. And if you just go along to one of those for the day, the ideas you come back with, you know, they can really change the farm. And going forward in the future, tourism's going to be massive. And again, it's probably going to be linked in some way to the potential subsidies and environmental payments and public goods we're going to have in the future. So I suppose as a sheep producer, can you take advantage of that? I think probably the key message is you're looking for positive, go-ahead farmers. That's the key. We're willing to change. And then you'll introduce ideas and they'll go out and try them. And if they don't work, they don't work, and you move on to the next idea. But you've learnt, and you know not to try that, or it won't work on your current farm. If you're not willing to change or adjust or try something new, at best you're going to stand still. And I'm afraid I can't see New Zealand and New Zealand lamb standing still. So you've got to think about those competitors across the world and what we're dealing with. You're also competing with your neighbour as well. If you stand still and they're 10 years ahead of you, you know, will you be farming or will they be farming your ground in the next 10 years? So it is very important to keep moving. There's lots of new technology now, and it's important to try and use it to the best of your ability.
How important in terms of resilience is being fleet of foot?
Yeah, I think it's very, very important. When I was in New Zealand, the key thing you noticed was that they didn't care what they were going to do. They were just looking at the next thing. Am I doing the right thing now? Should I move on to something else? Again, it's very much linked to profitability. That's what really drove them. And again, that's got to be the key message to farmers, like particularly in our area. There's a lot of farmers diversifying into poultry. Of course, they've got a land value sat there, and they're able to borrow against it. So why not investing in poultry? I know, again, it may be getting to the stage where we've had a bit of an overload of poultry farmers, but again, there's other opportunities out there, and something's always changing.
You mentioned poultry, and obviously when you're in a poultry situation, the key thing is having a contract.
Yeah.
How important are contracts going to be going forward, even with sheep, beef, and any enterprise you run on the farm, to ensure resilience?
Yeah, well, I think it's hugely important, but it's important that farmers know their own cost reduction to start with. That's the key. I think if you know what price you need to be sustainable, or you're happy enough with that kind of profit level, it's trying to get that out of whether that's the supermarkets or out of the abattoirs, or trying to work with them. So, of course, you've got Tesco's with their cost of reduction lying now for lamb production. Again, that's very key to farmers' profitability going forward. If you know you're going to have your lambs being sold at a certain price, you can plan going forward, you can invest. But, you know, if that lamb price was going to drop overnight by £30 per head, it'd be very tricky going forward or you'd have a much higher risk level. Again, with cattle, you know, we see now with the beef price slump, there's beef finishers losing £200 a head, and, you know, 1,000 head of cattle, they're pushing numbers through very quickly. You know, cash quickly disappears. So sometimes it may be better to take a slightly lower price, which you're guaranteed and know you can make money off, rather than always thinking ahead and trying to get that much higher price.
How important is cooperative marketing, do you think, within the industry?
I think it's very important, but I suppose that's the big issue with UK farmers, that there aren't really those cooperatives. And again, you know, for instance, I know Tesco's take 50,000 cattle on the Angus scheme. Well, you know, there's a huge number of farms there which are all working individually to supply Tesco's. If those farmers were able to get together, they'd have a lot more clout. But, you know, they'd be able to work a lot better with supermarkets and increase the sustainability going forward, hopefully. Specifications is hugely important. Again, firstly, because you're going to maximise your payment on those lambs. And secondly, you want to keep the consumer happy as well, which is the supermarket initially, but also those customers. It's important that you're wanting people to come back for that product time and time again. So as a hill farmer, I suppose the biggest issue you do have is trying to hit that specification of 13.5 kilos, and then you're able to get into the supermarket weight bands, and then you know, your price per lamb quickly increases. So a key driver to some of those hill farmers going forward is to try and increase slightly maybe the size of the ewes, and maybe the use of more terminal sires to try and increase that size of the lamb. And it's surprising that could be £10 or £15 per lamb, and that, you know, across 1,000 lambs, that's the difference between a wage or not taking a wage out of a farm, isn't it? So it's hugely important. Again, at the other side of it, there's a lot of farmers you know, hitting too high of weights and having a lot of overweight fat lambs, really. So really, we're looking for that consistency of product that I suppose the consumer can go into the supermarket, pick it up every week, and be very happy that it's going to be exactly the same each week. And that's the key to succeeding in with the type of lamb and sheep that we want.
Okay, so in summary, what are the key points of maintaining resilience in a sheep farming situation, in your view?
Yeah, well, I suppose from our point of system, the first one is getting a sheep. I'm not really worried about the breed, but it's making sure that the breed of sheep suits your farm. For us, it needs to be easy lambing, needs to be a hardy as well, and have that ability to get up and suck within a couple of minutes. Grassland management is hugely important. Really, that's the driver in terms of finishing your lambs quicker at a very, very low cost base. But also, it drives your stocking rate. The better your grassland management, the higher your stocking rate, and the less reliant you're going to be on subsidies in the future. Forage crops have also got a huge part to play. The key point to them is that they rest that grass during that winter period, and then that allows you to store grass for that lambing period and reduce your concentrate cost again. The use of clover and herbs is going to be very important in finishing those lambs going forward. But we've also got to be looking at technology as well. So we've got genetics and EBVs. Again, we want the right and correct genetics to be sending those lambs away a lot quicker. And I suppose finally, really, it's looking at benchmarking. You know your cost of reduction and compare it to your peers and the top third. And really the goal is to be that top third or above. And if you don't know your costs, you don't know where you are.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. We've had a nice afternoon. It's just turning a bit cold now, so we'd better go in for a cup of tea.
Yeah, okay, thanks very much.
That's great.